Welcome to Launch, where we explore the world of invention and entrepreneurship. I'm Jim DeBetta, here with my co-host Ron Reardon and our awesome producer Lee Cantor. Good morning, guys.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, Jim. What kind of show we got today?
Well, I think we're going to have something very exciting today. We have a special guest on who we'll introduce in a moment. But, you know, first to start off, Ron and I just were at in this very building, actually, at a seminar about innovation. And, you know, as I'm in there, when I think of innovation, I always think of inventors. I think of products, people that come up with really cool ideas and then try to get them to the marketplace. But when we were in this event, the innovation they're speaking about is on a very higher level, corporate, strategic type of innovation. And it always makes me wonder, as I mentioned in that workshop, that innovation isn't new. It's something that's been around since the beginning of time, and it seems like everything that's ever been created was something behind the world of innovation. Right, Ron?
I agree.
So we have a special guest, Ron. Take it away.
Yeah, we're going to be talking with John Strobel. And John, I know you've invented several things, but could you tell us just a little about what your life was like before invention?
Sure, Ron. First of all, thank you very much for inviting me to your program today. I started my business career as a buyer for a department store, and did that for 5 or 6 years. I got into the product distribution business for about 9 or 10 years, and then joined Philips Consumer Electronics. Spent the last 20 years of my corporate career running different business units for Philips.
Now, when you were at Philips, you must have seen lots of products come and go, right?
Many, many products.
So is that what inspired you to be an inventor?
Yes and no. I really do enjoy working with product, and had opportunities to develop and work with teams that develop many different products at Philips, TiVo being one of them.
Wow.
We were the first company to launch with TiVo. Actually, most of the work was done with TiVo, but we made it into a Philips product.
Well, I can tell you, there's no way in the world that I could exist on this earth without TiVo.
I know. Is that a game-changing invention?
I mean, I have 3 kids, so I could tell you right now that everything we watch that we love is through TiVo. We don't watch anything live anymore. It's almost like, you know, we're so used to, you know, going forward and backwards and pushing things through past the commercials that I don't know how we would live without it.
Yeah, because people's lives are so busy today that time shifting, which is what TiVo is all about, is it's just a hard requirement now.
Yeah, and, you know, what's funny, John, about your background is that for most inventors, they seem to not come from the business. They're just people that do everyday, normal, regular jobs that have nothing to do with products. So it's kind of interesting that you were a buyer, you were with Philips and kind of around this business. So at least you have a sense of, hey, when a product is created, the chain, how it goes along, how it gets produced, how the product actually gets into market, how it gets sold, versus a lot of people who just don't always understand what it really takes. So how long have you been on this journey with your products here?
This has been about 5 years, and you're right. In my experience with Philips, I was very familiar and comfortable with the process of product development, bringing it from an idea through the creation process and to market. So about 5 years ago, we were redecorating our home, or repainting the walls and the inside, and all the artwork was sitting on the floor for about 6 weeks. Such a pain in the butt to hang it, and finally we had out-of-town guests coming, and my wife said, hey, we need to get this art hung. So, you know, I found that the process that we go through was quite the same that most people do. You know, I'd be holding it up against the wall, and she'd be directing me, okay, higher, okay, right there, hold it. No matter how heavy it was, I had to hold it in this spot, and she would mark the dead center over the top with her finger on the wall, and then I'd measure the distance from the top of the wire to the top of the frame and then transfer that to the wall, and I'd pound in the hook, and we'd hang the picture, and she'd say, okay, that needs to be about an inch to the left or an inch higher or an inch lower. And, you know, it gets pretty frustrating. So finally, she kind of challenged me. She said, you know, if you don't like doing this, why don't you invent a better way to do it?
Aha. See, that's the magic right there, because I can't tell you how many holes I have put in sheetrock walls. And we have this one wall in the upstairs of our house where it's this collage of, I mean, there's got to be 25, 30 pictures of, you know, frames of different sizes, and all of them had the wires or those little metal hooks on the back. And I remember spending, I mean, literally hours trying to get those things right, get the wire hung, it was such a nightmare. I mean, there were times where I was just like, forget it, honey. You know, let's hire somebody, bring it in. Let's, you know, have somebody else do it. And it becomes an engineering project, and it shouldn't be that difficult. So with your picture placer, I think it's genius because it solves one of those problems where you're just like, oh, forget it. And to think I was going to hire somebody to come in and hang pictures, that's pretty sad.
Yeah, it's back to necessity being the mother of invention.
Right. Well, I had, as most inventors, when you begin, quite often the first mistake that's made is you try and invent something that solves every issue that you have. So when I first started developing the picture placer, I had something that was actually fairly complicated and had many moving parts, and it measured, automatically centered itself on a picture frame. It did all kinds of things, and consequently would have been pretty expensive to produce. My experience said this has to be very inexpensive. This has to be something that people will say, hey, I understand that is going to help me, and it's not that expensive. I'll buy it.
And that they can just throw it in the drawer. They don't have to, you know, think about it. It's not a big investment.
Right, right. So I one day I was driving to work at Philips, and all of a sudden I thought to myself, wow, I think I know how to do this very inexpensively, and it will work on 90% of all framed art with wire on the back. And so I thought, okay, now I've got something.
All right, so what was the first step, though? Okay, you're driving. You say, I've got this idea. I think I know what I want to do. But what did you, you went home that next day or the next week, and what was the first step you took?
He probably quit his job. Is that what you recommend, is quitting
sure,
your job
yeah,
right away?
Right, just quit your job and
actually,
give up everything.
Actually, Philips took care of that for me. I didn't. I knew that this was like in October of, I think, 2003. I knew that at the end of the year, my entire group was being eliminated out of Philips. So they were going to provide me with the opportunity to have all the time I needed to work on it. I did something that a lot of people in the inventing process don't do. Most people, they come up with an idea and they think, oh, I can't share this with anybody because somebody's going to steal my idea. I talked to everybody about it. As many people as I could say, I'd say, how do you hang your art? And they'd tell me, and it turned out to be the same process we went through. So I was getting pretty comfortable with, okay, this is a kind of a universal issue. I also knew that I didn't know how to do the mechanical part of it. So I did what in the development process we call a design brief, and took it to an engineering firm or a design firm. Actually, Philips Design, which is a Philips company. It was not part of the Philips Electronics company that I worked for, but they were housed in the next building, and I knew the people there. So I went to them, and in the design brief, you're not going to tell a designer how to design something, you just tell them what you want.
Right.
So I said, I want something made out of plastic. I want the manufacturing cost to be less than 50 cents. I want it to use the tension of the wire on the back to hold it in place, and I want it to be able to mark the wall at the precise spot to place the hanging hook.
Well, that's really good to just give them the parameters. I want this instead of coming in with, you know, a preset design.
Right. So they came up with three or four very similar designs, but different ways to do the mechanical, where when you hook the wire in the back and ratchet it up tight, it would maintain its tension. And then we took the best of the three and made it into to one product.
Well, how long did that process take from the time you went to Philips Design until you received what you thought was, or at least the closest thing to, a final product?
It was about 2 weeks.
Oh, really?
That's amazing. Yeah. Now, obviously, most people don't have buddies in the design business. They can just make a call. Did they do this as a favor for you, or did you have to pay them?
There was a cost to it, and I worked out a special arrangement with them on that. But
they were your friends? They were people you knew?
Well, they knew. Right. I was quite familiar with the head of the design group. He knew who I was, and I went to him, and I said, look, I've got this idea of a product, and I need design work done on it, and I also want the graphics done, and I want to be able to use you for packaging and everything else.
Right.
So he came back to me a couple of days later and said, boy, this is really an exciting product. We think you're going to do well with it. To do all the work you're asking for, he gave me a price, and which was fairly steep. he said, however, we'd be willing to work on a commission basis, so many cents per unit sold. So I signed an agreement based on that.
Now, they don't typically work for strangers out there. Like if somebody is listening and is going to go, hey, I'm going to just call Philips Design Group and they're going to take my project on?
Actually, they are looking for work.
Really?
As most companies, they're always looking for something to do. And, of course, they're in that business for profit, so they will charge. This product was very simple to do. As I said, it took 2 weeks, and that somebody wasn't working on it for 2 weeks.
Right.
It just took 2 weeks to get it done, so it took a little longer to get all the graphics correct. But
well, John, I'm looking at the graphics, and I see a lot of red and yellow. Is there a particular reason for that?
Well, this is the third design on the packaging. The first one didn't have yellow. The first one had my logo right in the middle of it, and I met with some folks. We used to every Thursday morning meet with an entrepreneurial team, and one of the members of the team, actually two members, came out of Coca-Cola, and they were very innovative and knowledgeable about the packaging area. And they said, look, you know, you need to have something bright yellow in the middle of this so that when people see it hanging there, their eyes will go right to where you want them to go. So we did that, and then that was a second generation, and then the third generation was when I was putting the product in, testing it in Home Depot. And Home Depot asked to make one final change, and that was, I used to say, picture placer, and then a tagline below it, hang it right first time, every time. And they were afraid that somebody might look at this and think that they actually use this to hang art from. So we changed it in the middle of that banner. Now it says picture placer, picture hanging tool. So there's no question that this is just a tool to use, not something you hang art from.
Well, it's all in the marketing. A lot of people come up with great ideas, and to be able to go through that process where you go through different renditions, different changes to the artwork. I mean, there are great products out there that never really sell because the message isn't there, or people walk by it, and if they don't get it in a couple of seconds, they just keep walking. So what makes this stand out? The colors of the packaging, the message, the tagline, and that's critical. And buyers are always looking for that angle because a lot of people can come up with great ideas and then, of course, get them somehow made and ready for market, but it's that package, it's that marketing
right.
feeling that allows people to connect with something. And hey, if I'm walking down the aisle and I see something that calls out to me when I know that this is a problem for me, I'm going to grab that thing, I'm going to buy 10 of them because I just want the problem to go away. And if the price is reasonable, then it's a home run.
Yeah. Plus, I noticed that the exact steps of how to use the picture placer are right there on the front where people can see it.
Right. Well, back when I was in the television marketing area at Philips, I was at the time in the industry where there's a tremendous change going from small dealers and what we call directed sales force to mass merchants, people like Walmart and Kmart and Target. And in those instances, the only person to talk to a consumer about your product was the packaging. So we had to, back then, all our packaging just said Magnavox on it or Philips or Sylvania or Philco. And there was no information about the product on it. So we had to transform our packaging into a real selling tool. So I had a background on that and understood that you only get a second or two when somebody's walking by to see the product. So you better tell them what it is and how it's used.
Yeah, well, when you have a big brand, and that's the sort of the disadvantage for inventors is that they don't have a brand yet. And so if your package definitely does not speak to what it is, you're in trouble quickly. When you're a Philips or you're an Apple or whatever, any brand that's known, Nike, you name it. When people see the Nike Swoosh, for example, they know what's in the box. I mean, they know there are sneakers in the box. So they don't have to do as much selling. They advertise. They're on TV. They sponsor everything and anything, that type of situation. But it is so critical. But, you know, I have another question for you that goes back to before we're at this point.
Okay.
I mean, what did your wife think about this whole endeavor? I mean, it's such an interesting thing to me to wonder how people's families react to you saying, hey, all right, I'm not at Philips anymore. I want to go after this idea, and I want to make this a business.
Well, as I mentioned, Philips was offering me that opportunity not to work. And as part of my severance package, I had at least a year of income coming in with benefits. So it was like the stars were aligned properly for me to go forward. And my wife, Joanne, was supportive. You know, we one of the first steps I took was I called Ron Reardon here, and we did what we call as a patentability opinion, because I had no idea whether we could patent something like this. It turned out there was like 72 other inventions that help people hang art.
Really?
But all 72 of those people made the same mistake that I started to make, and that was they made it way too complicated, so it was difficult to manufacture and too costly. And so consequently, they couldn't sell it.
So well, then what made yours, how did you attack this differently then when you were going about this? Did you patent it? Was it patented?
Yes.
Ultimately, what you decided?
As a matter of fact, quite often in the patent process, and Ron, you can speak more clearly to this, but it's unusual to get a utility patent on a product the first time. Most of the time, they'll come back at the patent office. You know, some lower-level clerk has looked at your paperwork and said, well, you know, it looks a lot like this, or it looks like this invention or that invention, and they throw it back at you. And then you have an opportunity to go back and say, well, this is why mine is different. This is why mine is unique against those, and then maybe you can get it again. I was amazed that it was probably because of the simplicity of this product, that we were able to get the patent first time through, which took about 14 months.
Yeah, because with the patent office, the pass rate for patents used to be about 65%. Right mm-hmm. now it's down about 42%. And it's whenever you send a patent application in, if you don't get a no the first time, you get real worried, okay, because you try to get as broad a coverage, you know, for your client as possible. And then it's a tension and it's a dialogue back and forth between the patent the practitioner and the patent examiner in order to come to an agreement as to what's novel about it and exactly what kind of claims can be allowed.
So now, out of the 72 people that already had patents in this general area, none of them attacked it in this way with the thing behind the wire and the pokey thing to make the mark on the wall?
Well, there actually are a couple other that hook on the wire and back, but nothing attaches itself temporarily to the frame. It's like you have to hold the entire artwork up by this device or something. Or there was one that I saw advertised, and I searched for this product because it was one of the patents that came up in the search, and I found where I could buy it, and it was cost me like $20, and it was so complicated to this day I had no idea how to operate it.
Right. It's just similar to there were things out there that were similar, okay, mm-hmm. but this was enough different, and of course it's the simplicity that helped a lot. Like a lot of people think that Thomas Edison invented the light bulb, and he did not. The light bulb existed when Thomas Edison was around, but it was more of a laboratory oddity because it was very thick glass and it had a tendency to explode. And what Thomas Edison did was he invented a little coiled carbon filament that made light bulbs inexpensive and you know, so where anybody could buy them.
Uh-huh. It's amazing how back then things got done. I mean, we look at the technology we have today, the resources, and to think that something as lasting as a light bulb got invented. You know, how did he know how to do all these things? He couldn't email anybody to ask for information. He didn't have a Philips around to help him design anything. It seems like everything
they
was
had
done.
More time than have TiVo. They had more time well, to just concentrate.
Plus, Thomas Edison slept underneath his desk because he did 1,000 variations of things that didn't work until the carbon filaments did. Well, John, as you try to go to market with this, you know, what was the process? What was the journey? What worked and what did not work?
Well, I looked at the market and I said it was divided into several different channels of distribution. There were something like 20,000 independent custom framing stores in the United States. Literally, almost every corner, every strip center, there's some place that's either a Fast Frame franchise or the great Wall, or there's a number of different ones, and right. then and there are small chains and larger ones, and then there are the people like Michaels and Joann stores. Actually, Michaels has the largest market share in the custom framing industry, 12 or 13%. And then there were opportunities with mass merchants like Target and Walmart, Kmart, and the such. And then there are lifestyle stores like Bed Bath and Beyond, and those types that carry artwork. And so what I did, I just did a matrix, and I said, okay, based on, you know, here's the different channels of distribution, and here's what I know about those. I know what their margin requirements probably are because I have a lot of experience with Philips dealing with them. So, and then what would it cost me to get to these people, And, you know, knowing that I have a product here that, that was going to retail somewhere with $799, $999, there wasn't a huge dollar volume available. So I finally centered in on going after the mass merchants, figuring they'd be buying thousands of these at a time, and so I could make less money for each one. As a matter of fact, I had contacted a friend of mine, and we were in a discussion about something else, and I was telling him about Picture Placer, and he said, well, where are you going to sell those? And I said, well, actually, the first store I want to go after is Michael's. And he said, you know, I used to work with a guy who I think is an executive there. And he said, would you like me to contact him? And I said, well, when I'm ready, yes. So a few weeks later, I contacted him. I said, why don't you call your friend, and because I'd like to get an appointment to see the buyer there. And he called me back, and he said, gee, this guy's president. So
he put, your Rolodex really helped you out here.
Yeah, it's, you know, you always start when networking with friends and family and those people you know. And make a long story short, I flew to Dallas and met with the senior VP over custom framing and showed him the prototype. And he goes, wow, that is so simple. He said, I love it. He said, I'd like to approve the packaging, and I'd like also for you to design a point-of-purchase display for our custom framing counter. He said, I think I can sell 200,000 or 300,000 of these a year. So, you know, I didn't need the plane to get back to to Atlanta. I was in a real high. And it took probably 6 months to bring the product from prototyping to fruition and get the packaging right and everything.
Did they want it to be private labeled with their brand, or you were insistent on keeping it your brand?
I offered a private label with them. Actually, the front of my product has my logo on it, but we do customize it for different different companies. A lot of them use it. So some of the there's Thompson's Frame and Gallery here in Atlanta. They have a, several stores here and in Birmingham, and they put their name on it. As it turned out, that Michael's, I was dealing with the custom framing area, which is a wholly owned subsidiary inside of Michael's, and they can't retail anything. They can only do custom framing. So they ended up, you know, buying, I think it was 10,000 of them, and use them as a giveaway. But that's how we got off and running.
And it's interesting because when you think about buyers, people don't often understand that buyers are a great help to inventors. A lot of inventors come. I mean, I always tell people, look, you should show up at a buyer meeting as prepared as possible. But you have to be open-minded, too, and thinking that, hey, look, I've got something. It's my baby, so to speak. But you got to be flexible because right. If the person who's going to buy it says, I just want you to change something on your package, or I just want you to make something different about the product that isn't very costly, but they're going to buy 50,000 pieces, 200,000 pieces, and they're going to really make an effort to sell it in their stores, you got to be willing to at least – think about saying yes. And I know when I started out in this business years ago, I mean, I took any private label deal I could. I made any changes I could. But then as you start building a brand, you start tightening up on the things you're willing to do and not to do. But by then, you've got momentum. So,
well, John, where's the Picture Placer now? What's the latest development?
Well, is it interesting? My focus originally was being on mass merchants. And a lot of people told me, they said, gee, being a single product company, you're going to have a lot of problem getting this into major retailers. And I felt because I knew how they operated, because I had negotiated deals for Philips with every major retailer in the country, I knew how to speak their language. And so I wasn't afraid to go after the big guys. And I did, and I was relatively successful. I had it in Kirkland's and Joanne stores and Michael stores, and 100 and some test market for store test market for Home Depot. But the thing that I didn't anticipate, and we didn't run into this with Philips, was that buyers change every 6 to 9 months. They move these people, and today they're buying, you know, picture frames. Next week they're buying linens. You know, it's something different. So, for instance, with Home Depot, I worked with the buyer there for 12 months, and as we're getting the next month, we're going to write the first order. He left. Start over ground zero.
Did you have to start again with the whole relationship again with a new person?
Yep, sure did.
Why, is that common?
That is ridiculously common, and that's why it often takes so long for people to get a product to market, because even if you have a buyer that doesn't leave, it just takes so long for them to review it, and then it's got to be reviewed by other people in the company, and then they have to find a space for it on the shelves, because right. As you go into a store, you'll always notice that there's never any empty shelf space. So you've learned firsthand that when you have to start over, you're really starting over with somebody new.
Right. So I've done two things, Ron, to answer your question. First off, I've formed a marketing alliance with a company called Hangman Products out of California. And they make a wide variety of patented devices that are useful for hanging things and actually hanging things from. They actually have a D-ring locator, which is, you know, works the same way my product works, only, you know, sometimes you buy those products, they have little D-rings on them. Well, if you ever try to hang something with two D-rings, forget it. You can't do it. Well, they make it easy. They have a sawtooth hanger locator. What they didn't have was a product like mine. So working together with them, we are getting better distribution. And then the other thing is that you know, it's available on my website, pictureplacer.com, and we are in the process now of doing a direct response television ad, which should be on the air sometime in May, and really excited about that.
Yeah, I've seen that, and that's really, really good. Well, John, let me ask you, what one piece of advice would you have for inventors that are starting this journey?
I tell them all the first thing, because believe me, being involved with the Inventors Association of Georgia, a lot of people would call me and say, you know, I've got this great idea, and they'd like my advice. And I would say 9 times out of 10, the product's already available. And the very first thing you have to do if you have an idea is to look for it. I found so many times that the product is readily available, and today with the internet, I mean, you can search on the Patent and Trademark Office yourself. It's not the easiest thing to do, but you can do that or just Google, and it's amazing how many people invent something that has already been invented.
Yeah, I know that I had one person call me that they had this idea that was brand new to them. They said, you know, women hate to get their hands dirty if the tire goes flat and they need to jack up the car. She says, how about what I've come up with is an electric jack that you just kind of plug into the cigarette lighter. And, you know, can you get me a patent on that? I'm like, well, why don't you go to google.com/patents and enter in, you know, electric jack and see what comes up. She calls me back 10 minutes later, so like, oh, it's already been done. And I said, well, my intuition told me that was probably what was true.
Well, there's always variations on a theme. I think, like you said, John, I mean, there have been a lot of solutions made for hanging pictures. And you talk about those double D-ring things. I mean, I would just tell my wife, just don't even buy those ones because it was
Or you just make better. A wire go from each of the rings and then use
right.
that.
Yeah. Right. See, here's another idea in the making right here. But I think the big takeaway, John, if you agree, is that, yeah, obviously you have to do your research. You have to know what exists in the market and find out and do your homework. And with the internet, it's great that you can go to a store and then come home and then search for something on a Google search. The other thing, too, is having patience. Like you said, it doesn't happen overnight. You had a lot of good resources to work with, but it takes time. It takes patience. It takes persistence to stay on the buyers. If a buyer just ups and leaves or gets fired or quits or whatever, you can't just give up. You got to stay with it if you want to achieve your goals.
Right.
Well, John, the website for Picture Placer, what is that?
It's just pictureplacer.com.
Okay. Well, that sounds super. Well, it's really been great talking with you today, and you've been able to give our inventors and the listening audience some really tremendous valuable information as to what your journey was and what went right and what you could have done better.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Great show, everybody. Till next week, this is, what is it, the launch? Launch hour? What's the final
launch.
The
we're
final call on this? Just launch?
Just launch.
Launch.
Okay, we will see you next week every Thursday at 10 o'clock, 10 o'clock Eastern time. It's launch. See you next time.